This episode is brought to you by Archie, a leading cloud-based co-working management software designed to automate all your co-working space operations. Besides its ability to automate everything in your co-working space, such as billing, invoicing, door access, or contract signatures, what makes Archie stand out is that its software is not only extremely powerful, but very easy to use, not to mention their beautifully designed mobile and conference room apps. So, if you want to optimize your co-working space in a fast, efficient, and user-friendly way, then be sure to check out archieapp.co for all the solutions to your co-working space needs.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alex Ahom, and this is the European Co-working Assembly podcast. Today, we're talking cross-border culture, cross-border work, community, living, and much, much more. Recently, I was at a conference in Montenegro. Now, maybe some of the people watching don't know where that is, but I can tell you it's a very beautiful country. The region is amazing, but don't take my word for it. I met a great guy there called Edo Sadikovic, and his story amazed me. So I'm delighted to have you on the podcast today. Edo, how are you?
Hey, Alex, thank you for inviting me. Very nice.
Good.
How are you?
Good. I'm great. So please tell us a little bit about where you're from, firstly.
Yeah, I'm originally from Serbia, from ex-Yugoslavia. And I right now I live between Spain and Portugal. But I was born in Prijepolje, in a town right on the border with Montenegro, Bosnia, and but inside of Serbia. So my generation is I remember when we were in a high school that we had more elections than. That we had more elections and then we had than our age. So it's like we were living in the constant political atmosphere, post-war political atmosphere that was kind of also a bit shaped what I do now.
Wow. Yeah, there must be so much change. I mean, historically, there's so much change in the region. And then, of course, in the last, 20, 30 years or whatever, that the countries are changing, cultures are adapting, people are moving around. So living on the border, living across these cultures must have been very interesting as well.
Exactly. That's why I think I love speaking about borders and conflicts, just because maybe because I was born there. I always say that someone who is born on the border is just a bit more world person than other people who are maybe born in interior, just because there is this kind of small cultural difference that you can feel and that you can learn since you are growing. So for example, our accent from there is a bit more different because we have a bit of accent from Montenegro, a bit from Bosnia, a bit from Serbia. So our accent is quite different than Belgrade accent, for example. And but that's not just that, the same with the food, the same with some customs, and the same with many small things, how we live them, how we use them, just because we are kind of border people.
Yeah, amazing. And definitely travel broadens the mind. We were talking a lot about digital nomads and those kind of people. But yeah, when you're living near borders, when you're traveling for work, you're traveling because of even conflict, whether it's voluntary or you're forced to, it definitely gives you a different perspective. And that's why I thought, when I was preparing for this, for our talk, I thought of one of my old friends growing up, and his name's Bojan, and he's half Serb. Well, his father is half Serbian, half Bosnian, and his mother is Croatian. And, I knew him from when I was like 12 until now. And I still quite can't get, his background. It's so interesting, and there's so much difference and conflict, so many interesting stories. And as you said, it's shaped who you are and even what you do for work. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. There is so many layers in the identity, especially for example, if you are born in any border, it's like you have so many layers of identity. But if that is border with so many religions, if you are border with where the war happened or post war happened, that means that it adds cultural, it adds more and more layers to your identity. That it can be very confusing. And I think a lot of young people are also struggling. Like, okay, should I take a side? Which side should I take, or should I be neutral, or how should I proceed? So it's like, I think it's a very interesting topic.
Yeah. So we've covered a bit about the geography of the region, you know, of Eastern Europe, the Balkans, and I think it's relevant for co-working, co-living, because there's so much activity and movement when it comes to community building, co-working and co-living coming from Eastern Europe, and I don't think it's spoken about enough. But what about the work and life practices and culture? What is it like? And I know we're going to move on to, you've moved to closer to the west of Europe, but what's the kind of work-life culture like in the Balkans and that part of Europe?
But it's I think it's still traditional like before, where like Serbia now is growing. The Balkans are now growing in the IT industry sector, and especially younger generations, and that is like fantastic news. That is probably the best thing that could happen to the region. And so what's happened there, that there is so many like companies that are working like their independent studios or outsourcing companies, and that's fantastic part. But also, but 95% of the population is still in this traditional mindset, and they are actually struggling, and they are not seeing the opportunities of internet and what's going on there. And so I believe that there is still a lot of things to come there, and to change the status quo, like in the capitals, in the big cities. So co-working industry is helping a lot to change this, but in the smaller towns, this is still invisible. So around where my whole town, there is no co-working space. So it's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had my own co-working space for about 6 years, and it's not the Balkans, but we had a few ladies coming from Romania, and they told me that a similar situation where the work is very traditional, and the outlook on the future of work is quite traditional. So the older generation, what they tell the younger people isn't really what they want to hear. So the younger people are moving to the bigger cities or completely away from the region and to some of the major cities in Europe. So it I think it also has an impact on the work that the young people do and where they want to work from, whether it be in their villages, bigger cities, or start traveling to other parts of Europe, as you have. So where are you right now?
So right now I'm in Portugal, in Setúbal, which is like half an hour from Lisbon.
Okay.
Where we are. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you you live or work in Spain, right? In Galicia.
Mm. Exactly. I moved to Galicia in 2013 and to start there one of the first rural co-working and co-living spaces, which is called Sende. And right now in Setúbal, today actually we are starting with the first event in our second space, which will be here also in one village. And so today is the first day of Sende 2 in Portugal.
So many people who listen to the podcast or even work, you know, flexibly, remotely, you know, they're moving from city to city, that they're changing industry, changing jobs. Some people are worried about the culture clash or the differences. Was it hard to move to Spain, or was there a culture shock?
Well, culturally, I wouldn't tell. Like I would say that it was much easier for me moving to Spain than if I were living maybe in Germany or Sweden, which would be like quite culturally different. I believe that I adapted quite well in Spain, and before I would travel a lot, so I think it was quite smooth.
Okay. So the big one thing I really wanted everyone to hear is about Sender. So you're literally building community with your hands. You're building community and homes with your hands in some cases. So can you tell us a bit about Sender?
Yeah. So Sender is a co-working, co-living in Spain and now in Portugal. And So in Spain, we built Sender in 2013, and it's located in the 20 inhabitants village in the mountains, right on the border with Portugal.
So just wait a minute, just in case anyone didn't hear that. How many people live in the village Sender?
20.
20 only people. 20. Wow.
20. Only 20 villagers.
Wow. Amazing. So yeah. So 20 people living there. What's the housing like? I know you said before, you know, in the conference that you're building houses and things like that. So how do people live in this village of 20 people?
Yeah. So Spain has big problem, and big part of Europe has big problem with abandoned villages. So in our village, there is like 80 roofs. It was 80 old houses or animal houses, and the rest were abandoned by people, but they had the owners, of course. So what we did is like we would buy very old stone houses, like 200 years old stone houses, and we started with only two houses. We would rebuild them and started to operate. Today we have seven houses, and we host people from all over the world. So basically, until now, we hosted almost more than 3,500 people from 55 countries, and people from everywhere come there to work. Even people from the companies like everyone knows, like Google, Netflix, Disney, Boeing, but also a lot of small entrepreneurs and a lot of people who, as you mentioned, changed career. So many people changed their career. They adapted to this new way of living, not just digital nomadism, but just people realize that they can use the opportunity of internet and work for someone or work on their own project. So what they do, they come to our village and everything is kind of... So people live in seven houses. We have seven houses, two co-working spaces, gardens, and they are all around the village. So we have one common kitchen where we cook together. We usually cook together dinners. We have this long 3-hour dinners every night. So we are building. We are observing a lot. I love observing community. I love observing like when people come, where they are going to sit, why one group of people like this terrace and other not, how they use the spaces, how they interact with people, how we can hack the process so they can interact better. And most of these things is resolved with the oldest trick ever, to put people to cook together and to eat together. So I always say, when we are building co-living, first build the kitchen and the rest. That's why in Portugal here now we have three kitchens and only one co-working space, and which is
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, again, my co-working space was quite different, but to what you had there, of course. But I did know that it was a very important element to the social side of my space, and that was the kind of cafe area. I wanted to have a cafe, a bar, you know, a restaurant, a place where people could eat, because that's something that, you know, across cultures, across borders, we all share this fascination and this interest and this need to not only to eat, but to have input, not just food, but cultural input, emotional input, intellectual input. And that happens, it can happen around food. So I'm not surprised that happens, but I am still, I'm just blown away that you've gone there to this abandoned village. You're getting houses, you know, 200 year old stone, you know, houses, repairing them with your hands, with the community, building them, and people from all over the world, 55 countries are coming to be in the community, to be part of something. Because the cities, and I'm going to ask that later on about, you know, city life, but you know, I was born and raised in one of the biggest cities, you know, in the world, and or definitely one of the biggest cities in Europe, and you know, I loved it, but there is a charm, and there is a something great about smaller groups, you know, something that is also very nourishing and good for the, you know, good for the soul. But building communities with your hands is very impressive. But as a community leader, as the community grows, do you worry that it will lose its charm if more and more people hear these stories? Do you worry that everybody will come and it will make it into the next Madrid or Barcelona? Or what do you think about how the community is growing and how it will grow?
I believe we try kind of to keep it small. It's a small project. It's a Sunday. It's not startup. It's a small business that works. And so now we just started with Sunday 2, and I'm not sure if we are going to build one more somewhere. I think we could. If we could build 10 more probably, and I believe they would work. But I think there is this freedom also. Freedom of us who are running the space and making it works well. I think it's also important that keeping it small is also the reason why it works. If this becomes a company with 50 employees, my whole responsibility would grow, responsibility of everyone would grow, and I wouldn't believe that the sender would be the same. So I think people come because it's a place full of basics that we need, that everything is logical. But there is no this any kind of luxury or any kind of useless additional elements around. So I believe if we keep it like this small, it will always work. And I think we can also control it. We can easily control it, so we can control the growth. People cannot come there and buy houses because there is no houses and there is not much like room to grow, for example, in our village in Spain. So what we can do, we can grow with events. We can grow with events, but for digital nomads who are coming, there is always a limited number of people and there is a sweet spot number. And so it's nice to keep it small, but it's also cool that people know it, that it's small. So they are already, for example, booking next year just to have their own spot in Sende for 1 month. And I think this is all kind of part of this even charm of Sende, but also it helps us with our marketing. And for us personally, our aim is not to get super rich of Sende, but to make the ideal small business, and we are almost there, kind of.
Yeah, I think it's very important that like you mentioned, the idea of small business, and you know, I've spoken a lot about what the perception is of business, and the perception of co-working. When I started my co-working space, a lot of people I spoke to, the perception of co-working wasn't necessarily correct, especially in this part of the world. I think the perception was a bit off. And over the years, when a few, you know, huge global players, you know, big, well-funded, you know, spaces came into play, again, this perception changed. But the reality is that the vast majority of co-working spaces and communities are small. And they are like yours and they are like mine. They are not necessarily the 30,000 square meter, you know, offices that cost 10,000, 20,000 a month. You know, they are about, you know, real connections, real people. But also the sustainability element is important. You know, it's a business, as you said, and businesses most of the time need to make money to survive. So that's also a challenge that many spaces, co-living, co-working spaces have, is how do they make money? They may have loads of fans, they may have loads of followers on social media, but you still need that there are still people to pay or bills to pay. And we must promote financially sustainable business as well, because again, a lot of people that we speak to are freelancers, and they shouldn't work for free. They need to be paid. So I think we need to also promote the idea that people are rewarded also financially. I think we're all getting a lot of emotional and intellectual rewards from this, and we're helping people. but we also need to, there needs to be a business element to it as well. So, and just on that point is, you mentioned it's a successful business. So things are also going well in that regard, are they?
Definitely, definitely. I believe that it's much more easier to run a co-living and co-working than just co-working, because just the numbers are different. Co-living, the element of accommodation adds a lot, and the business is going very well. Like, so I was also co-founder, not co-founder, but board member of the Impact Hub Vigo, and it was very difficult. I learned like how difficult it is to run a co-working in the city, because just like, I don't know, you need 40 chairs at least to fill, just to survive and to pay one salary and to pay the rent of the space. And in co-living is totally different. There is this element of charging for accommodation, and then there is co-working. So, and there are also co-livings who charge for food. So like the numbers are completely different, and I would say it's completely different business. Even though community can be similar, I would say the business is completely different, and especially in the village, because today people realize that, okay, we can work from anywhere, and so many people actually like to live in the village, because before, people, why would they live in the village like 100 years ago? Because it was a nice place to live. They had animals and they enjoyed it. It was almost the same to live in the city or in the village. And today this era came back, because now with internet we can live in the middle of nowhere. We can have nice air, we can have everything green around, we can have all this inspiration, and we can live there. So basically, what we are learning is that this business is very good. I believe if we start like 10 centers today, that they would function. So now I was following closely all this co-living industry in rural. Like, most of the spaces were fully booked. And I think also Corona boosted a bit the business. And I would say all spaces who are working on community, they were working well. So there is like this big error in this co-living industry that people are promoting their nice fancy rooms, and they say, hey, I have these nice rooms and there is a desk and there is internet, so this is co-living. No, that's Airbnb. So basically, co-living is with people around and with community around who have actually purpose to be in that space and at the same time and together. So I think if you put these three pieces together, like space, workspace, and community, it's just today is the day, like, I think to run this kind of business, and probably it will grow because it's just logical. It will grow because people need to work online, people can work from anywhere. So many companies now are just closing their offices, but people still want to work from somewhere, and a lot of people just don't want to be all the time in their home.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thanks for that. I have one more question for you before I let you go. I know you have a busy day. You've got events there in Portugal. Good luck with that. I wanted to know, is the future of work and life, in your opinion, is it outside the bigger cities? Do you think you're going to see more people leaving mega cities and going to villages and smaller cities?
I think yes. I think a lot of maybe it will not change, so we will not see this change like so fast, but I think it's very commonsensical, because there are people who love cities, they will stay forever in the city, but there are like millions and millions of people who just want to, they are in the city because they went there to make money, to survive. And before, that was super logical to go in the city because there are opportunities in the city. But internet is changing everything. So now we can literally be in the mountain in a small cabin with 4G, and we can work from there. So, and even a slow internet can work. So until last year, we had a very slow internet in our village. We were operating 7 years with very lousy internet. And Sende was full, and people actually didn't mind when they put on the scale lousy internet and all their freedom that they can do, that they wake up, they make their orange juice, they make their breakfast, they sit to work, then they chat with people, then they come back to work, then we cook together, then they hike, then they enjoy this nature. So basically when they put on a scale what is heavy, then they choose nature, they choose this kind of life, and then internet, because they wait a bit, but they work. So... And luckily now we have even good internet, so I even don't have a doubt about this.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I mean, I think my worst in the early days of having space, one of my worst nightmares was if the internet went down, what would people do? And I remember, I think it was Liz Alam and Alex Hillman, some very well-known co-working influencers. They were trying to convince me to go to the European Co-working Conference for the first time. And I was terrified of leaving my space because I'd been there all day, every day for the first few years. And eventually they convinced me to go to this conference. I think it was Milan. And the day I left, the internet went down, and the community was calling me. Well, no, some of the people who were working there were calling me. Alex has gone down. It's a disaster, catastrophe, and I was so scared and worried. But you're right. What I realized is because we had built a real community, and it wasn't just a buzzword. I wasn't just saying it because where I'm from, my upbringing, like you, it meant something more. And somehow I had built an actual community. We didn't have hundreds and hundreds of people, but we had people there, and they liked each other, and they worked with each other. They trusted each other. They enjoyed being in the same space. And when the internet went down, they found solutions to work. It went down for like just under a day, but they found solutions to finish off what they were doing. Some of them went for a walk with others. Some of them started to make food. They played some games. As I said, the ones that needed to work, they found other solutions, but nobody canceled their membership. No one was like giving me 1-star ratings or anything. It was fine. So you're right. I think if you build a real community and this real, connection between people, when things go wrong, they don't go that wrong most of the time. So yeah, great to hear that as well from you. And so really, thanks for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. How can people reach you or hear more about what you're doing?
Yeah, maybe they can check our website, which is sender.co. There is no M at the end. Sender.co.
How do you spell sender?
sende.co.
Okay, great. And so yeah, if anyone wants to reach out to Sender, it's sender.co. So thank you very much once again. I'm going to let you get back to planning and preparing for all the great events you have. Good luck for the launch. And that's it for today. I have been Alex Ahom. This has been the European Co-working Assembly podcast. You can reach me at alexahom.com. You can also reach out to me at LinkedIn, all those other social media platforms. I'm almost everywhere. Thanks for listening, and I will see you again next time.